Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'm going to speak on a subject I've spoken on several times previously. No harm to do so. We find Srila Prabhupada often spoke on the same subject. Repetition is necessary. What does he say in Bhagavad Gita Purport? Repetition is necessary of some. He writes in one of his purports that repetition is necessary to important points to drive them home. On your diary it says Zen Garden. And there's a silhouette of the Buddha according to Thai iconography. Do you know what Zen means? No. Zen apparently is it comes from the word dhyan, meditation. It's a Japanese rendition of it. Zen Buddhism arose in Buddhism was developed but much of Buddhism that's extant in the world today was developed in China after it came from India. And one school was when it went to Japan, it became called Zen Buddhism. And it's meditation, and it's weird. I mean, it's more weird than most Buddhism. They have what they call koans, which means I guess we could say in an irreverent way ridiculous sayings, which you're supposed to think about, and then it short circuits your thinking process, and then you get self-realization. The most famous one is to meditate on the sound of one hand clapping. So I'm just interested that because this went to China from India some few thousand years ago, and this has become famous in the West, and then everything in the West is coming to India. So it's written here Zen Garden, although you don't know what Zen is. And so maybe I'll have people in India also soon meditating on the sound of one hand clapping. Anyway, that's not what I wanted to speak about, just as I happen to see your diary with Zen Garden written on it. I wanted to speak about, this topic I wanted to speak about was causes of ISKCON's malaise. Malaise means sick condition. What are the causes? In Ayurveda, if there's a sickness, the cause has to be addressed rather than the symptoms, as in Western medicine. First of all, is there a malaise? Well, it depends on your outlook, it depends on who you associate with, I guess, who you choose to associate with. Maybe it depends on which website you go to get your insights on ISKCON. The official website is The All Is Wonderful, and there are other websites which point out ways in which it's not so wonderful, and the not so wonderful is that popular word in ISKCON today, wonderful. Wow, maybe things are not so wonderful. What's going on here? Is it okay? Not working. So, what shall we do? What is the cause of this malaise? We'll have to blame you. Blame Vrindavan. Anyway, I wouldn't be speaking on this if I wasn't convinced that there are serious problems. I spoke about that in several lectures. One of them was on the subject of ISKCON's cancer, in which I suggested that not believing what Prabhupada says, or making Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Kurya Aika Arana Kari Homane Asha, not making the words of Srila Prabhupada one with our heart, considering Srila Prabhupada and his instructions in a relative way, that we are this is the cause of the troubles. Some people didn't like me saying that. And there are those who say, well, look at all the good things. There are good things, no doubt about it. And at the same time, as I often state, no one who knows about the situation of our movement in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada was present with us, and who knows about the state of it now, can deny that many things that are considered normal or even good in ISKCON today would, during Srila Prabhupada's personal presence and for some few years after that, have been considered deviations and clearly not what Srila Prabhupada wanted. I stated this on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day in Vrindavan last year. The next morning, Godbrother asked me to give some examples. And I said, well, you got it right here. Just look, I just pointed toward the direction of the Gurukul building and said that this Srila Prabhupada started this Gurukul as an alternative to the slaughterhouse schools. And this school is still going on with the same name, Bhaktivedanta Gurukul, but it's converted into a slaughterhouse school. The aim is not to make... The prime aim is not to make devotees of Krishna. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to make preachers of Krishna consciousness. But it's to... The prime educational goal is to prepare more idiots for the rat race, and maybe they'll chant Hare Krishna. In Sri Lanka, and I was just there, and Vasudev told me that there are several graduates from the school that's been run there by devotees, but they're not devotees at all. They're Hindus. They don't have any particular interest in Krishna consciousness any more than the average Hindu. Other things, the propaganda that goes on for feeding the poor, building the nation. You've all heard these things before. We believe that to feed a hungry child is the best way to serve Lord Krishna, from ISKCON. So what are the causes? Well, the causes should be known by the symptoms. The symptoms may also be causes. I'll get back to that later. Some people would say it's due to the guru system. But then there was the Ritvik Vadis who proposed this, who they started this whole midday meals nonsense. We're giving a backhanded compliment to the pundit on the hill by going along with this. It appeals to materialistic people. Ritvikism in and of itself doesn't cure problems like the money consciousness. We could say this is one of the cause of ISKCON's malaise, that it seems in many cases we equate success with collecting large funds of money, which is definitely there with Mr. Ritvik on the hill in Bangalore. Very money conscious. Not that money consciousness is bad, if everything's used in the service of Krishna. But, well, it is better. Money is to be used in the service of Krishna, but it shouldn't be money consciousness. It should be Krishna consciousness. And to think that having lots of money is the goal or the sign that our movement is successful is not Krishna consciousness. Some would say because of book changes. It's definitely an issue that Srila Prabhupada's books, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is, has been edited, especially as has many edits. It's definitely an issue because all the time, wherever I go, someone comes up to me and quizzes me about this. And my standard reply is that, well, pretty much everyone will agree that some change is needed because, for instance, the planet of the trees should not be immortalized, when Srila Prabhupada clearly didn't say that or mean that, and it's ridiculous. So definitely some things require to be changed. Should it remain forever because the original editors were inexperienced, unknowledgeable? Should it remain forever that purports are in the wrong places, wrong references are given, and so on? Sanskrit is left out. Some would say, maybe some would say yes. Some say that, well, specifically Govinda Dasi said that Srila Prabhupada combed through the original manuscript with Hayagriva Prabhu, the editor. But clearly that's not true because Srila Prabhupada, he himself suggested editing changes later, specifically about cattle raising. If Srila Prabhupada had gone through the manuscript himself, carefully going over it, then he wouldn't have allowed cattle raising to get in. So, and apparently chronologically that's incorrect also, because Srila, during the time that stated when Hayagriva was supposed to be with Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't there at all. So anyway, about book changes, it's a highly you could say inflammatory term. It gives the idea that the essence has been changed, although people are still becoming devotees by reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. Many would say, all right, some changes are needed, but not so many. But then who's to decide? Then it becomes subjective. So I would say it's an open issue. But who is to say then? Who is to say? Who will say? Jayadvaita Swami can't say, according to some, but then others will say. Who will say? Anyway, the scenario which we see today of deviation within ISKCON was already in motion before the book editing started. So that is seen by many as a major offense to Srila Prabhupada, but I really don't think it was done in that spirit at all, of offense, or rather in a spirit of service. But like I say, it's an issue which is very much in many devotees' minds, and like Ritvikism, it's probably not going to go away. That doesn't mean it's right. Another possible cause, which we don't talk about or think about or discuss much, and again, this could be a symptom as much as a cause, is deity offenses, because offenses to deities are very serious, but substandard deity worship has in many centers and in many homes of devotees become the norm. Worshipping deities with devotees who are not brahminically initiated, or even if they are brahminically initiated, they don't live as a brahmana. Reducing the number of offerings, or even from the very beginning, deities are installed without the standards that Srila Prabhupada, or they're not installed at all. There's worship going on with this so-called uninstalled deities. So, offenses have reactions. Now, the one I want to get onto more, all of these points which I discussed could be discussed much more, is a failure to institute Varnashram. As Srila Prabhupada wanted, every center should be a Varnashram college. Now, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse, Acharya Mata Jai Shai Mata Shah Tar Agya Langhi Chale Shaito Asha. The order of the spiritual master is the active principle in spiritual life. Those who neglect the order of the spiritual master are useless. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport gives a statement which has been very caused much distress to his godbrothers and their disciples, that the Gauriya Math, because it deviated from the order of Bhaktisthan Saraswati, has become useless. Very heavy statement. So Srila Prabhupada, he stressed so much on establishing Varnashram, it is dropped from the agenda of ISKCON. So it's disobeying the order of the spiritual master. In the spiritual science, Srila Prabhupada taught us that this is a spiritual science. You just can't tinker around with it and expect to get the same result. Half a hen logic. You like this, you like the golden egg that comes out of the backside of the hen, but you don't like to feed the hen because it costs money. So chop up the front and keep the back, and then you don't get anything. Specifically, Srila Prabhupada spoke about establishing a Brahmin class. This should come first. Then the rest can follow. A Brahmin class to lead a headless world. The example is there. The Brahmin is the head of society. If there's no head in society, then it's a madman. If the head is not in order, then you have a madman. But as a movement, it seems that we're more concerned with dhanam and janam. Collecting money, having big temples, having many followers, which are not bad things in themselves. But if the head is not there, if the Brahmin class is not there, it means first class character, knowledge of Shastra, knowledge of Siddhanta, then simply to increase and increase without being firmly grounded in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra means that we must deviate. Deviations couldn't take place if we had a culture of Siddhanta Balaya Chitte Nakaraha Alash Yaha Hoite Krishne Lage Sudira Manash. If we had a culture of being very much concerned with Siddhanta and not just making decisions based on what we think is pragmatism. Just like, for instance, the hot issue at the moment has been for the last few years probably, is of female Diksha Gurus. But it's not an issue to be decided on the basis of popularism. Well, if we have female Diksha Gurus, then in the West, where it's a very strong feministic ethos, we won't get criticized for not having women gurus. It's of course that's not argued, but it's said to be on, well, it's on the basis of Shastra and tradition, but to date no one's done or any deep study of this on the basis of Shastra and tradition. It's actually not very much needed, because if we see Shastra, well, according to Kaunteya Das, it's so clear that women gurus should be there that there's no need to do any, it's a closed issue, he so arrogantly says. But clearly it's not a closed issue. No one's done the deep research into these matters. It means taking on issues of tremendous import, we don't even seem to have the idea that we should take time, study carefully. It's very much a mode of passion. We've got to make a decision. We've got to do it. We've got to do it one way or the other. Why? If you don't know, then just leave it. There's no pressing need to install female Diksha Gurus. If you're not sure, then just leave it. That video was made by Dhanavir Maharaj about cosmology, and one Madhva pundit is quoted on there that if you don't understand something from Shastra, then just leave it. Someone will come in future. It may be not now, maybe after some few hundred years, someone will come and give the understanding. If you don't understand it, don't pretend that you understand it. Just leave it, that's all. So just say you don't understand. This idea that we have to understand everything. And we have to make decisions based on some understanding, one way or the other, even if we don't properly understand it. It's like the Kami world, where they just presume they know something without going very deeply into it. Just like the whole of the Kami way of thinking is based on Big Bang and evolutionary theory. But there are serious questions about this which they just don't want to deal with, because it's easier not to. But that's not the Brahminical approach. So without having a class of real Brahmins who lead by character also, that's also a very important point. Srila Prabhupada, he insisted many times that all of his disciples rise early, have Mangal Aarti, full program, follow the principles very strictly, but we don't emphasize that. And even many of our leaders, including GBCs, temple presidents, sannyasis, they won't be seen in Mangal Aarti. We don't know if they're chanting their rounds in some cases. So, if they themselves are not situated on the spiritual platform, then how can they be spiritual leaders? It's not just by making some rules and making some laws. I don't know who in our... Is there anyone in our movement who looks up to the GBC as spiritual guides? I don't think so. When you think of them, you think of them as a group of spiritual, maybe individually, some of them. Now this may be said, this may be considered, and definitely will be considered by some as blasphemous, but we do have a standard, and the standard is the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, who said that all the leaders should rise early, attend the programs, and so that is the standard. It's not blasphemous to point out that if some people are not following that. We've made no effort to institute a culture wherein learned devotees of high character are so respected that others look to them for guidance. That is the Brahminical culture. The Brahmins, in traditional Indian culture, Brahmins were so much looked up to because they were very learned, they were detached, and such persons should be looked to for advice and guidance. But In our movement, frankly speaking, such qualities are not particularly encouraged. And if someone is expert in organizing money collection, they are considered the best devotees, or the devotees who we should look to for leadership and guidance. Or if they have a PhD from a mundane university. We make false brahmanas. We just throw a thread on someone when they've been around for some time, although they're not trained, either in not deeply trained in shastra or in sadhacha, a word which is central in spiritual culture in any Indian language, but which is practically unknown in the Iskoma. How often do you hear people talk about sadhacha? It's probably spoken about more in any average Mayavadi ashram than it is in our society. If we say the word sadhachar outside of India, maybe inside India, maybe people don't know what it means even. It means proper behavior. That's good behavior. But specifically, sadhachar means one should rise early, bathe regularly, follow sadhana, not be cheating, lying, following shastra. Shishtacha is the same meaning. The behavior of the senior, learned, respectable people. So this point, I'm talking about cause of ISKCON's malaise, and I'm emphasizing this point that we haven't created Brahminical culture. We don't have an idea to create Brahmins, which Srila Prabhupada spoke about. There's this idea, well, if you're a Vaishnav, that's just it. But that Srila Prabhupada said we should have a class of Brahmins trained so that people automatically look up to them. That's not there. The idea that, well, every Vaishnav is automatically transcendental, which Srila Prabhupada, when in the famous Varnashram conversation, devotees brought this objection to Srila Prabhupada. Well, a Vaishnava is above a Brahmin, and Srila Prabhupada said, then why are they falling down if they're actually transcendental? A Vaishnava is above a Brahmin, but the position of a Vaishnava is above that of a Brahmin. But a Vaishnava who comes from a background of Varna Sankara, which means almost everyone in the modern age, including within India, is culturally not trained in the same way that a brahmana, even a caste brahmana who's actually trained in that way, is trained. So that culture is lacking. Our concept of authority lies in position. If someone has a position, they're an authority. Whereas, which is there in Vedic culture also, the Kshatriyas, they have authority, but the Brahmanas, they have an informal authority which is above them. Without respecting the informal voice of true Brahmanas, corruption is sure to ensue. Unless society has a head, which includes ISKCON, then we'll act on the platform without that pure guidance. Then we'll act on the platform Kshatriya, perverse Kshatriya, might is right. Ever notice that within ISKCON? You just have to follow the authority, and never mind whether the authority, what authority are they following? That's, you're not allowed to ask such questions. So might, and for the Vaishya, the corrupt Vaishya, money is right. And for the corrupt Shudra, just corruption. Everything is right. Whatever I want to do is right. Now, of course, you may say, well, it's offensive to say like that, but devotees do have it's not that just by putting on some neck beads that you become a Vaishnava. Our conditioning is very strong, and our attitudes remain very strong unless they're fully purified. So Brahmanas are required who are expert in distinguishing reality from illusion for the benefit of all. Ever heard that phrase? Bhagavatam, second verse. The Bhagavatam distinguishes reality from illusion for the benefit of all. If we don't do that, then we won't clearly distinguish Krishna consciousness from Maya. And in the name of Krishna consciousness, we may be acting in Maya. We may be, in the name of preaching Krishna consciousness, we may be preaching something which is not the absolute truth. We're told to preach. It's difficult to preach surrender to Krishna. So we preach something else. Give money to feed the poor, and it's tremendously successful. We're great preachers. People are responding so well, but we're not preaching what we're supposed to preach. So, preaching is the essence, yes, but preaching Krishna consciousness according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that should not just you preach and people like you, that's all. So, unless we can clearly distinguish what is real from what is unreal, then we'll take our material desires to be something pure or something desirable, and then we don't make any progress. There's the condition of Maya, there's the condition of not being in Maya, in full Krishna consciousness. There's a huge difference between them. It's not easy to become free from material desires. So it's much easier just to say that, well, the position of being in having material desires is Krishna consciousness. And so we get so many things increasingly we're seeing the who can sing in a very attractive way, they're considered a great kirtaniya. Never mind whether they follow regulative principles or what. That's not the main thing. If it's pleasing to me, that's Krishna consciousness. This is not what we heard from Srila Prabhupada. So, in such a condition where there's no clear brahminical guidance, there's no attitude to develop brahmanas, then we fall back on the shudra philosophies of communism or so-called democracy, the idea that everyone is equal, which, although to people who are not trained in spiritual knowledge, it sounds very wonderful. Oh, everyone is equal. Equality. But this is actually a demoniac philosophy to say that everyone is equal, because it goes against. To say that everyone is or should be equal on the material platform goes against Varnashram. It goes against Krishna's plan for organizing society so that it can be purified. It's clearly not true that everyone is equal. So it means a commitment to falsity, even on the material platform. I mean, anyway, the whole material platform is false, but within that we can say certain things. For instance, we can say that not everyone is equal. But if that is a truth within the material sphere, spiritually there is more equality. But even then, it's not that everyone's all the same. So then we want to adopt, instead of adopting Krishna's Varnashram system, we look at corporate management structures and all this kind of thing. And we move further and further away from Srila Prabhupada by neglecting his order. And it becomes impossible to establish Varnashram, because there's no one to guide in selflessness and simplicity. It's understood. Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they have material, the mentality of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras means that they have material attachments, but they're within the system so that they can dovetail that. The Brahmanas are supposed to be models of selflessness and simplicity. The Kshatriyas, they may live very opulently, but they have to be prepared to give their life, literally, to protect the citizens. The Vaishyas are very interested in economic development, but they have to give. they have to give to the Kshatriyas, who then redistribute that wealth. They can't just keep all that for themselves. And the Shudras, they're told, you have to serve the higher classes. You'll become purified by doing that. But without, this is the Asura Varnashram, in which there's the system is there, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, but the aim of Varnashram, which is to give everything to Krishna, is not clearly established, and so the system breaks down. It becomes exploitive. So unless there are simple, it means austere, detached, and learned brahmanas who others can look up to, then Varnashram can't be established. And instead of the selflessness, which dharma, Varnashram dharma, worldly dharma, is meant to establish, and then that's at the societal level, and then ultimately Krishna consciousness means complete, not just selflessness, but giving oneself fully to Krishna. But selflessness can't be there unless there are Brahmins to lead Varnashram. The Shudra is selfless. He's very interested in sense gratification, but he has to surrender himself to his master. He has to accept a lower position in society because he has so many material desires. The Brahmin is distinguished from others by his non-interest in material acquisition, or name, fame, glory, position. A Brahmin, he doesn't cultivate these desires. Srila Prabhupada often gave the example of Chanakya Pandit. He was ruling the whole kingdom, but he just lived in a very simple hut. And Brahmins will do that so that they won't be compromised. They won't take payment. Brahmana cannot take payment. Otherwise, he becomes shvavriti, he adopts the profession of a dog, in which he becomes obliged to whoever pays him. And we see the whole of academia, they are paid, so they can't speak freely, they can't pursue truth. So in our society, unless we have independently thoughtful, pure, simple, detached brahmanas, then who is there to look up to? We need a whole class of them. Srila Prabhupada said our ISKCON is especially meant for making a class of brahmanas. But there's no emphasis on that. And then everyone will become selfish and think of their own self-interest. And even in the holy dham, business going on, to survive, how you can survive. So you in business and land business, and then attacks, physical attacks, trying to kill people on land matters, and the whole thing can become very ugly. I mean, this is a reality. I'm not talking something theoretical. Recently that happens. One devotee in Mayapur was physically attacked and left for dead over some property dispute, apparently. So we need brahmanas who are real spiritual leaders by personal example. Unless leaders actually inspire others by their example of vairagya and vidya, then our movement must be materialistic. If we don't lead by, of course, bhakti, yes, bhakti, but bhakti is that is manifested according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Sarvabhaumbhattacharya saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vairagya vidyanija bhakti yogam shikshartham shikshartham ekam purushaf purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripam Buddhi Yastam Aham Prapadye. Sarvabhauma prays this famous prayer of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that I surrender to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared, he's the oldest person, eternal person, who has appeared to teach bhakti to himself, which is enriched with or exemplified by, characterized by vairagya and vidya, means detachment and knowledge, spiritual knowledge. So unless leaders inspire others by their example of vairagya and vidya, then a movement will become materialistic. If there's no vairagya, then there's, if there's no virag, then there's raga, attachment. So unless we stress these things, then our movement must become materialistic and more concerned with external achievements rather than internal achievements. If someone is expert in collecting funds, they're, and building temples, they're considered very good. And someone who's actually cultivating taste for the holy name, taste for studying Shastra, that is not much recognized or appreciated within our movement. So these are some causes come symptoms of our malaise. What to do about it? Well, we have to try and create a Brahminical class as much as we can. What to do individually? How to survive in Krishna consciousness amid all of this? Well, our strength will be our faith in Srila Prabhupada and his instructions and following that. We others may not follow, but we should. If we want what we came to this Krishna consciousness movement for, which is to develop pure love of Krishna, then if we stick as best we can in an atmosphere within the movement which is not very favorable for it to the pursuit of pure devotional service under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada, then that will be our strength for going on. But we should see these things and understand these things and maybe stand a little apart from the way the movement is going on in general. Stand a little apart and try to follow what Srila Prabhupada says without introducing so many things in the name of kirtan, in the name of culture, in the name of time, place and circumstance, in the name of yukta vairagya. So many pious sounding excuses to deviate from what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do. So, Hare Krishna. Nothing new for most of you, I guess. But I wanted to stressed here on the need to create Brahminical culture, because specifically here at this project, that seems to be our main aim, or one of our main aims here. It's not an easy thing to train people in knowledge of Shastra, Sadhacha, and then the internal commitment to actually be surrendered to Krishna, living very simply and not being it. How to live in this world, contribute to the Vaishnav society and the whole mass of living entities within the universe who are Krishna Bahimukh. They are inimical toward Krishna. How to contribute toward that while maintaining one's own internal detachment from the world, so that we want to foster. I was waiting for you to come to speak on this. So, any question, comment, or anything else? Playing with the deities, yeah. Children may. Well, there is. Talking about playing with the deities, children. Srila Prabhupada clarified this in one letter where he said a devotee had asked Srila Prabhupada, obviously, about giving children deities, and Srila Prabhupada said no, because you don't have the culture. I was doing that as a child because my father raised me and he showed me how to do properly. So from the very beginning of his life, he had the proper idea to do that. But he said, you don't have the culture to do that. You could find out that letter if you like. I asked you to find some letter. Did you find that about Srila Prabhupada said about the... Okay. Yeah. That when we were going through your files yesterday, we came across a letter from Srila Prabhupada which said members of the Krishna Conscious Movement can take a stone from Govardhan and worship. Yeah. But then we have to see also what worship means. One should be living a pure lifestyle. One should rise early, puja should be done in the morning. One should regularly do that worship. You should not eat food cooked by non-devotees. All these things one should follow. So, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON ki jai. You want to ask a question? Okay, go ahead. My books will be the law books for the next 10,000 years. In less than 50 years, we see that most of us are not following him. After 10,000 years, well, only the name is going to be there. Well, Srila Prabhupada did say that this movement will remain as long as the devotees remain sincere. Do you remember that quote? This movement will go on as long as the leaders, I believe he said, or the members, sincerely stick to the regulated principles. Prabhupada stressed this so many times. I showed you that file I gave yesterday, and it's just again and again in his letters. Especially to leaders, he stressed, you have to follow these regulated principles. And for Prabhupada, that didn't mean just four principles, but rising early, chanting your rounds, taking only Krishna prasadam, going out regularly for sankirtan, book distribution, preaching, all these things. But the great point is that Srila Prabhupada's books are there. And so people can see what the standard is. You can always come back to the standard because the books are there. Book changes issue, but in the books, no one's changing the books to say that you should eat meat, drink wine, and the same message is there. Some may say that by inserting or leaving out a comma, the message is subtly changed. That's possible in English language, and probably in most languages which use commas and all this kind of thing. But anyway, that's another whole topic. The planet of the tree shouldn't stay. Other things should stay, I would say, but who's to decide? Someone has to make a decision. If someone else says, okay, now we have to decide what things should say and what shouldn't say, will there be a consensus that everyone will agree on? I doubt it. So even if you make a third edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is, with less changes from the first edition, then you're still going to have people disagreeing. Some will say, no, it's been it's still changed too much, and others will say, no, it's not changed enough. There's no end to it. It's an impossible situation, because if you change it, someone will protest. And if you don't change it, someone will protest. I would protest if the planet of the trees was immortalized. Yeah, some words become archaic, the meanings change. Many years ago, before this whole book changes issue became an issue, I remember there was a discussion in a class after Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan, and Harishori Prabhu made the point, which I never thought of before, and it shocked me at the time, but actually it's true. He said, well, in future, Srila Prabhupada's books are going to have to be totally re-edited anyway, because the English language changes all the time. It's just like Shakespeare's works. Anyway, there are no original manuscripts of Shakespeare's works, but if you wanted to read them in the Elizabethan English, no one would understand. And the further view, if you go back just a few hundred years more to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, unless you study and take a degree in medieval English, you wouldn't have a clue what it's all about. And even Shakespeare's work, even rendered into modern English, they still need footnotes to explain. I remember we studied at school, Twelfth Night. Can't remember the story of what it's all about at all, but I do remember there was one statement about something about maybe your grandmother became a partridge. Partridge is a kind of bird. What's that called in you find like that all around. They're not that common. Definitely you see them around. They're one kind of short and little fat bird, and they hardly fly much. You do see them around here, but I don't know the... Yeah, you'll see them in a country place like that. And in England, people used to like to eat them, but now there are plenty of chickens, so they don't bother. So then the footnote was there that this refers to the idea of reincarnation, which means it was around in Elizabethan England, even. But it's not part of the general British culture, so you need a footnote to explain it. So, anyway, Harishori didn't say all that. I'm just adding a little extrapolation. So, yeah, the English language changes all the time. One word that has changed its prominent meaning since Srila Prabhupada left is the word gay, which used to be used as an adjective for... Its prime usage was as an adjective, not a very much used word, for someone who's... someone or some manner which is happy, carefree. Now the prime usage is as a noun, meaning a male homosexual. So that's so one word which has very much changed. And gradually we'll see that more and more. Even Srila Prabhupada, his use of English was unusual. In some ways, for instance, his use of the word envy is the way he used the word envy is archaic way of using it. Envy in modern English means more like jealousy, whereas Srila Prabhupada used it as a translation of dvesh, which means a bad feeling toward others. Jealousy is a part of dvesh, but it's not a synonym for dvesh. It means to be... It's a specific type of bad feeling when you see that someone has got something or some quality which you don't have, and you dislike them because of that, because you would like to have the quality more than them. So you're jealous because someone is wealthy. You think badly of them. So there's an example. So again, this needs brahminical consideration. These are these are topics which it's not so easy, where you just like some general knowledge quiz. What is the capital of the Ivory Coast? General knowledge quiz. What's the answer? First question might be, what is the Ivory Coast? It's a country of sorts in West Africa. What's the answer? You don't know. But anyway, Ibadjana, I think, something like that. Where it's just either you have the answer, either it's right or it's wrong. If you say the capital of the Ivory Coast is Hyderabad, it's wrong. It's incorrect. If you get the right answer, it's right. But many issues, it's not just such an easy matter. Should the books be changed or not?
Yes.
No. Take a vote. It's not so simple. It's nuanced matters. They require Brahminical dispassion, which means virag, dispassion. Virag is practically a direct translation. Brahminical dispassion, but that doesn't mean there's not concern. But one is not attached to promoting one's own particular vision just because I have to be right. I must be right because that's what I think. And, I'm me. And I must be right because I'm so great. But a willingness to look, as Srila Prabhupada often said, to look at issues from various angles of vision. Try and understand it. Hare Krishna. Gaura Hari Premanande Hari Hari Bo. Hare Krishna.